This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening, and what a couple of weeks this has been. What's it all cost? You heard the cost of all this in the voice of our federal worker friend, Marcelo Del Canto, there.
It really was a wake-up call for what my wife and I both thinking, hey, we both work for the federal government. You know, it's as stable as it gets. And, you know, we were caught a little bit short-sighted, as I'm sure other folks were as well.
Those are personal costs for him and other federal workers in Washington. But what about the political costs, the historical costs? In the annals of history, where does this kind of event end up? A conversation later this hour with former Treasury Secretary W. Michael Blumenthal. Also, the notion of bad behavior and life and death consequences, how to inject a sense of consequences into the parallel world of online social media, when the consequences of bullying can be suicide and the police in the real world are simply ignored. That's later this hour. And on a day all about redemption in Washington, I think it's safe to say that, perhaps we'll return to some young voices turning away from faith as we continue to examine America, the young nation, less and less under God. But first, on Capitol Hill, the prayers answered for all those federal workers, and there was a message to those workers and the rest of us from the commander-in-chief about the upshot of all this.
We come from different parties, but we are Americans first. And that's why disagreement cannot mean dysfunction. It can't degenerate into hatred. The American people's hopes and dreams are what matters, not ours. Our regard for them compels us all, Democrats and Republicans, to cooperate and compromise and act in the best interests of our nation, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
President Obama speaking today, messages to the American people. I'm guessing the American people might be saying, enough with the messages, just focus on the job before you all. But hey, what do I know? Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent, what do you think? Message received here?
Well, the shutdown is over. The debt limit is lifted for now. What kind of messages did Capitol Hill receive from the rest of the country? That remains to be seen. We could be right back in this movie, John, but for now, crisis averted, I guess.
What about Republicans? What are they saying about this? Is this, we're ready to do it again? Is this a strategy that they've dumped? Is, Senator Cruz persona non grata? There's a lot to reexamine here.
There's a lot of anger towards Senator Cruz, and you saw a parade of Republicans heading on to television yesterday trying to marginalize Cruz, saying what a terrible episode this was. We can try to recover, but we've done so much damage to ourselves. But let's listen to Ted Cruz. If you thought that Ted Cruz was humbled or somehow marginalized in his own mind or by his own base by the episode of the last 2 weeks, take a listen to Ted Cruz here.
We saw the House of Representatives take a courageous stand listening to the American people that everyone in official Washington just weeks earlier said would never happen. That was a remarkable victory.
Are they saying victory over in the House, by and large, among the GOP?
Well, let me play you another congressman, John Fleming, who's from Louisiana. Now, the question for him was, have you all learned that to push the House leadership in this way is a bad idea? Do you think you lost credibility? Do you think the Democrats have the upper hand on you now and that you'll be marginalized? Listen to Fleming.
No, I think it builds credibility because I think Democrats did not think that we would press this. And now they know that we will and that we might do it again.
It's Representative John Fleming, from Louisiana, speaking yesterday. I mean, are they really serious about that? I mean, can they do that? Will Speaker Boehner, for instance, go along with that once more?
And that is the question. Can they do it again? They can sure try. It depends on what strategy the leadership follows. Again, that group that Fleming and Cruz belong to in the House, not Cruz, but Cruz in spirit,
sure,
is about 30 strong. They drove this process on the repeal of Obamacare. There are new budget negotiations that are at least optically starting this very morning when Paul Ryan and Patty Murray, the Senate budget chairman, meet in front of the cameras to show that the big budget negotiation is starting. Can these folks derail it again? Again, they can try. The question is, will Boehner follow them? Listen to Aaron Schock. He's a younger congressman. He's from Illinois, counts himself a moderate. I asked him, hey, what has to change here? What lessons have the Republicans learned from this episode? Should they follow this group of 30 again? Listen to Schock.
From my vantage point, it's become clear that there are certain members who will not be a constructive member of the team. And so we need to recognize that. And I believe build bridges with our friends on the other side of the aisle.
I think it's safe to say there's more than one congressman in shock this morning in the GOP. What do they say, though, specifically about Boehner? Did he get any support yesterday from the folks you talked to?
And here's the big question, because let's go to the vote tally for a second, because it's important. 285 House votes for this deal. Finally, John, only 87 Republicans, nowhere close to a majority of the majority. You've heard of the Hastert rule. They wound up blowing the Hastert rule out of the water on this one. And that's always dangerous territory for a speaker, especially on a high profile vote. 198 Democrats, not a single Democrat in the House or Senate voted against this deal. So then you turn around and you go to the conservatives. Hey, is Boehner in trouble? Do you think that he's not sticking to your values? Listen to Tim Hoolskamp. He's a Tea Party affiliated conservative, not always a friend to the speaker. And I asked him if he thought, after all this, Boehner fought for his priorities or if Boehner was in trouble.
No, in general, I mean, it was what the conservatives wanted to do. And again, when the majority said we're going to do something, he said yes, and he did it. So I was pleased with his response to what most of us want to do. So.
And of course, there's no real incentive to do anything. I mean, they don't have to do anything until the end of the Congress. And you know, that's in 2015, I suppose. So Boehner can just kind of squeak along. Let's remind people of the Hastert rule that, as you say, seems to be in flames today. That's the rule whereby nothing will be brought to the floor of the House unless it commands a majority of the Republican votes, right?
Correct. In this case, a majority of the majority is the cliche. And in this case, that means a majority of Republicans at least support it. Boehner has tried to go further than that when he can, which is to say, pass a bill with 217 or 218 Republicans. Don't rely on Democratic votes at all. And in many cases, he's been able to do that to the extent that the House has been able to pass things. But when you do that, John, by definition, what you're getting are ideologically pure votes for your party. And I think Aaron Schock's point there, as a budget negotiation comes along, Schock was trying to say, like, look, I haven't been here a long time, but we can keep passing pure Republican-only bills. But in this world with a Democratic president and a Democratic Senate, we'll just keep staring ourselves in the mirror. So we can marginalize the Flemings and Hoolskamps and Cruises unless they want to change their ways, or we can try to get some like-minded Democrats and move forward. And I think that story hasn't been written yet.
Well, we'll see. I mean, the test of bipartisanship is really going to be made over the next few weeks and months. But, you know, I missed it, but there was a real C-SPAN moment at the end of all this yesterday, right, Todd?
Yeah, there was, John. During the vote to pass the debt limit and shutdown bill, a woman who is named Diane Reedy, she's a House floor reporter. That's also a stenographer, really. She stepped to the microphone at the podium and started yelling into the microphone. And a lot of us in the speaker's lobby off the floor didn't hear her. We just heard the gavel dropping. John, a bunch of floor keepers and guards grabbed Ms. Reedy. She's a 20-year veteran, shuffled her off the floor right past me and into an elevator. It was at that point that I caught some sound of Ms. Reedy, and I want you to listen to this. It shook a lot of people up.
He will not be mocked. He will not be mocked.
Don't touch me.
He will not be mocked. The greatest deception here is this is not one nation under God. It never was. Had it been, it would not have been.
John, that was a moment that got a lot of attention on the internet and on television, and that sound there. Diane Reedy was interviewed by the Capitol Police and then taken to a hospital for a mental health evaluation. We have not heard about her condition.
Well, a surreal ending to a surreal story, to be sure. And again, it must have been stressful for everyone up there. Todd Zwillick, thanks as always.
You bet, John.
Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.